Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Eric J. Dolan, award-winning author of numerous books in maritime history, and we're talking about his latest, Left for Dead: Shipwreck, Treachery, and Survival at the Edge of the World. Eric, welcome back to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thanks for having me back. It's great to be here.
Now, as advertised, this is indeed a book about shipwreck, treachery, and survival, but so much more. This is one of the most amazing wild nautical stories I've ever read. How did you come across this story?
Well, as you know, finding a topic for a book is always difficult. Yeah. And oftentimes when I'm working on a current book, something triggers my imagination. But for this, it was a little bit different. I remembered a book that was written in the 1980s that was simply a compilation of accidents, disasters at sea from the 1500s to the mid-1800s. And for each one, it just had like a paragraph or two description of what the event was. So I'm flipping through it, and I'm going, oh, yeah, I know about that disaster. Oh, I've heard about that one. I know about that one. And then I suddenly came to this paragraph that talked about this American sealing captain, Charles H. Barnard, who ended up getting intentionally marooned on the Falkland Islands for 18 months. And that stopped my attention. I said, wow, I've never heard of this story. And so right beneath it, they said he wrote a book that he published in 1829 about his travails on the Falklands. So I said, okay, I got to read that book. I went and got that book. I read it. I said, this is a wild story. Is there enough other material for me to tell a real history of this? And fortunately, there were a few log books. There were some after the effect, after the event, writings of different individuals who were involved. There was a lawsuit and a court case in London and a lot of newspaper articles. So I said, yeah, this is a great story. I want to tell it. And that's how it happened.
It is absolutely an incredible story. And thank God you printed large maps in there, because you're all over the place in the Falklands in this thing. Things happen all over the place. Wild stuff happens. And it's not just one ship that's involved. And this is what I want to give sort of the outline, the skeleton of the story, because people really need to read this book. So let's set the stage. The time is 1812. What's going on?
Well, we're on the cusp of what will later become known as the War of 1812, and there's an embargo that Congress and the President are going to place on shipping. And the reason you place an embargo on shipping is to give ships that are at sea enough time to come back to port before hostilities break out. So they're just about to lay down this embargo, and there's this sealing vessel, the Nanina, out of New York, and the owners of it and the captain of it, Charles Barnard, decides, hey, we don't want to get caught in this embargo. Let's leave now. And so they leave basically when the embargo is coming down. They go down to the Falkland Islands. They start sealing. They think they're all alone. And then in the beginning of 1813, an American whale ship shows up and says, hey, by the way, the war began last June, and this kicked in a clause that was in the agreement between Barnard and the owners, where if war broke out, because they knew that was a distinct possibility, if war broke out, the Nanina was supposed to head back to the nearest U.S. port. But Barnard and his 12 men decide, hey, we don't want to go back right now. Sealing is good. And if we go back now, we might get caught by a British warship. So let's stay in the Falklands for another year, and maybe the war will be over by then. So they think they're alone. They continue sailing. And then all of a sudden, in April of 1813, they see smoke rising from Eagle Island. And they go to investigate, and they discover that there was a British brig that was coming from the Australian colony.
Let's hold it up there, because, again, I don't want to give too much of the story away. Now, first of all, what I love about your books is that you do a lot of technical digressions. Sealing was really important. Why?
Sealing was not as big as the whaling industry, but what happened, starting in the late 1700s, really, a number of countries, including the United States, England, other places, were really involved in killing seals in the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, even the Indian Ocean, and stripping them of their pelts because there was an insatiable demand for those pelts, fur seal pelts and sea lion pelts, in China.
That's
and,
right. Wow.
The Chinese would pay a lot for example, a sea otter pelt. That's another one of my books, Fur, Fortune, and Empire, talks about the sea otter pelt trade. Well, seal skins were not as valuable as sea otter pelts, but still, you could get between 35 cents and $5 per seal pelt. And if you multiply that by the 2.5 to 3.5 million seals that were killed in this 20 to 30 year period, you're talking about a pretty big industry. So that's what got the Nanina and Charles H. Bernard down to the Falklands. But it wasn't just the seals. I have to add one other thing that does relate to the whaling industry. They were also there to kill elephant seals, which are these huge, you know, animals that weigh more than a ton.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of blubber on them. And what they would do is kill these elephant seals, strip them of their blubber, throw the blubber into a tripod, just like processing whale blubber. And the oil that they got out of that was second only to spermaceti oil, which came from a sperm whale. So that was another way to make money. The sealing operations made money.
Now, it was a brig. Can you just briefly describe what kind of ship that is?
Well, it was a couple of masts and about 73 feet long. It had lower hold, a lower deck, and then an upper main deck. And it was pretty roomy for 13 people.
I was going to say,
people.
Yeah. But, now, they also carried a shallop?
A shallop. Well, that's just an old term. Because I've used that in a couple of my books. I ought to look up the etymology of it. Basically, it's just it's larger than a rowboat, but it's smaller than a ship. It was probably about 25 feet long, 20 tons in weight displacement. And it was a smaller tender, in effect, that a larger ship would use to go into shore to do their business. In this case, it was the smaller boat that they would take from the Nanina, the larger boat, which would remain moored in one place. They would take the young Nanina, the shallop, and they would travel all around the Falklands to where the seals congregated. Then they'd kill them, strip them of their pelts, and then they'd end up bringing a lot of stuff back to home base, which is where the Nanina was.
And now we get to party two. The Isabella and Master George, is it Higton?
Higton, yeah.
So where is he coming from?
Well, I didn't find a lot of information about his early history other than he was a merchant ship captain. He's British. And he was hired by the owners of the Isabella, which was just basically a merchant ship leaving from the penal colony of Australia. It was called New South Wales at the time, and they were heading from Australia, from Port Jackson, which is Sydney Harbor now, to London. That was their ultimate goal. And they had 54 people on board. A lot of them were just crew, but there were also 34 passengers. And among those passengers were 14 armed Royal Marines, and there were 10 convicts or former convicts, people that had either been pardoned for their crimes or had served out their term and were heading back to the mother country, and four of them were female prostitutes. So George Higton, he was the captain of this ship, and the problem was he was a drunkard, and he was irresponsible, and he wasn't a good sailor to begin with. So they almost crashed on an island that had only recently been discovered south of New Zealand. And it was only the heroic actions of another person on board, Richard Brooks, who was also a captain of transport ships that took prisoners down to Australia. But he was just going back to London to pick up his family. So he took over the reins of the ship, the Isabella, and averted disaster, and then they went around Cape Horn, and they had a really tough time getting around Cape Horn.
Yeah, yeah.
And then their goal was to go, they wanted to originally go to London, but they decided, let's stop at Rio de Janeiro first. And through some real miscalculations, and then in the final analysis, George Higton was down below during bad weather when they were very close to the Falkland Islands. They thought they were further away. He was down below with one of the prostitutes, and he was drunk, and they crashed into an island in the Falklands.
That when you read that, when you hear that, it seems like, how can you crash a ship? But oh my God! So you have these two groups of people who are essentially at war with each other.
Yes, they. But only one of them knows it at the time. The Americans have been informed that the war broke out when the Australians' ship left in mid-December of 1812. They had yet to hear about the outbreak of war. So I don't know if you want to get to the next stage in the story, but
yeah.
the Americans discover the castaways, the British brig, the Isabella, the crash site. And the Americans do the right thing. They agree to forego the rest of their sealing venture to rescue the castaways. And then they realize, after they tell the castaways of this deal, with the British are very happy and thankful to the Americans, Barnard realizes, hey, they don't even know the war is broken out. I've got to tell them because they greatly outnumber us. And he tells them, and they still agree, you're doing the right thing. Thanks for agreeing to rescue us. And they start the preparations for leaving for the Falklands.
Not so fast.
Yeah.
So, there's so many fascinating digressions in your books, as always, that are about maritime history. There have been no love lost between the British and the Americans.
Oh, no.
British have been impressing American sailors?
Yeah, I mean, one of the main reasons that the War of 1812 broke out. I mean, essentially, we beat them during the American Revolution. They never got over it.
No.
Great Britain, they thought for many years that America was going to crumble, fall apart, and they'd come back to us. And during the early 1800s and the Napoleonic Wars, the British naval machine, which was the largest navy in the world, they needed a lot of labor, and they just couldn't fill the ranks with just people from England. And so they started stopping American ships, merchant ships, even naval ships, and they would take people off those ships who they claimed were deserters from the Royal Navy or were British citizens and not Americans. And a few of them were, but most of them were just Americans, and they were a convenient labor source. And this was a huge sore spot in the United States because we were being treated horrifically by the British Navy. And there were other reasons. Britain was just not playing nicely with the United States. And finally, Madison and Congress, and in 1812, they'd had enough, and they declared war.
Now, I think one of the main characters in this book, this history, is the Falklands. I mean, as a matter of fact, I just had a couple of friends who were photographers who wanted to photograph penguins, and they took a 3-day trip to one of the small islands off the Falklands. And it was incredibly tough place. Let's talk about the Falklands. I knew that there were two main islands, but there are just countless smaller islands surrounding it, and all these inlets and bays. It's like an incredibly complicated place to navigate.
Oh yeah, I mean there are 700 islands if you count all the islands or little pieces of land that are visible at low tide. But at high tide, you can only see about 200 of them. But that's still a lot. And yes, it's sort of like when the continents split apart, they left the Falklands there as a bunch of crumbs. And there are a lot of hazards just under the water. There are huge kelp beds that can cause havoc with ships sailing through them. So if you don't understand, if you're not familiar with the Falklands, and you're sailing anywhere near them, you are in potentially great danger. Now, the American sealing captain, Charles Barnard, and a few other men on his boat, they had been to the Falklands before, so they were familiar with it. These British castaways who crashed there, they knew virtually nothing about the Falklands. Obviously, they crashed into one of the islands, but it is a treacherous place. And as for it being a character, I like the way you put that, because that's exactly the way that I thought about it. I mean, the Falklands are this archipelago about 300 miles to the east of the southern tip of South America. And it's cold, you know, in the winter months. it's 36 degrees average temperature. In the summer, it only goes up to 49 degrees. There aren't any trees on the Falklands at this time. And it's incredibly windy with the average wind speed about 18 miles per hour. So that turns 36 degrees into the upper 20s. And there's no, it's relentless. And there's no way to escape it unless you build a hut. But even then, the wind is whipping through. So it's this really inhospitable place for human beings to live. And there, in fact, were no other people on the Falklands during the War of 1812. However, one of the things I found interesting, especially if people remember the Falklands War in the 1980s between Argentina and Great Britain, is that the battle lines or the conflict between the British and the Spanish and even the French at one point started in the 1700s. There were brief settlements, British, French, Spanish settlements on the Falklands. But by the time the War of 1812 broke out, the British and the Spanish had decamped. So there was nobody else on the Falklands when the sealers got there originally, and then they were joined by these British castaways.
It's amazing. I want to talk about the wildlife. You were talking about the fact that there's no trees. It's just constant wind. And there were obviously seals.
Yep.
There are penguins there. And there's a weird – the Wara? I'm a huge zoologist, and I read about wildlife all around the world. I had never heard about that until I read your book.
Yeah, it's sort of like the dodo. Parallels. The Wara was, some people, they call it sometimes a Falklands dog, a Falklands fox, a Falklands wolf. It's bigger than a fox, I think, bigger than your average fox, smaller than a wolf, but it looks sort of like an interesting dog breed. And they weren't there in great numbers to begin with, but when mariners started arriving on the Falklands, just like happened anywhere in the world when humans first encounter wildlife, the wildlife is not really scared of the humans. So it was very easy initially to kill birds and seals and these waras. And for whatever reason, the people on the Falklands who came after this event, when they started settling again on the Falklands in the 1830s, 1840s, they hunted the waras both to keep them from, I think part of it is keep them from killing sheep, but maybe just for sport. And there weren't a lot of them to begin with. So by the 1860s, the last of the waras was killed.
Wow.
And a zoologist who visited the Falklands in the early 1800s predicted that that was what was going to happen, because even at that time, people were hunting them mercilessly. So it's a sad story, but it's an all too common story in the history of humanity, you know, wiping out small pockets of species.
Especially island species.
Yes.
Now, there were also pigs.
Yeah. There were pigs, hogs, boars, you know, the different terminology. But yes, but those were not endemic.
No, they were released there.
Those were not native.
But
they were basically an insurance policy that mariners used to deposit all over the world. Whenever, because these mariners in the 1700s, mariners were already going to very far-flung places and many islands, not only to hunt seals, but also they were involved in whaling, and they had to stop off at islands to get water. And a lot of these islands didn't have either a mammal or a large meat-producing animal that they could kill. So what some of the early mariners did is they brought these hogs with them, pigs, and they would put a couple of them, or maybe 5 or 10, onto an island with the hope that they would breed and create a larger population. And that's exactly what happened in the Falklands. They weren't on all of the Falklands, but a couple of the big islands, there were populations of hogs, and that proved very beneficial.
They're not like your farmyard pig. These are fierce. I mean, there were incidents in this story of people, you know, really getting nailed by a pig. As a matter of fact, the pet dog got really...
They have tusks. They're basically modified canine teeth that come down from the bottom and the top, but they could be, you know, 4 or 5 inches long. They're like little tusks of an elephant almost, but they're maybe more lethal. And these hogs were you know, they could be, you know, 50, 60 pounds, maybe up to 100 pounds. They weren't as big as the hogs that you see in a domestic farm, but some of them could get quite large, and they were very muscular, and they were very fast. So the Americans, well, the people who were the American sealers at first, and then later people who were stranded on the Falklands, they probably couldn't have killed any hogs if they didn't have sent the dog with them, because
right.
the hogs were too fast, and the men, I'm mixing up stories, but they ran out of ammunition. They could shoot them for sure, but if they, barring not having a gun or not having ammunition, it's kind of hard for a human being to corner or chase down a hog. They're much faster, and all they had is knives and a lance, which they really couldn't throw like a harpoon, and clubs. So scent as a dog proved invaluable because he was very fast, he was very brave, and he knew how to clamp on. And what he would do is when they saw a hog, Barnard would give him an instruction, and Scent would run and grab the hogs by the ears or around the neck or maybe the foreleg, but he'd want to stay away from their mouth if possible. And he would slow down the hog or knock it over just enough time for the men to swoop in with their clubs and knives and beat the hog to death, essentially. But it was very dangerous. Scent, at one point, got gored in the groin, and that put him out of commission for a while. And another time, he had one of his eyes popped out. So he had a huge gash on his hind quarters, and he kept going back into battle. I mean, sometimes it took a couple of weeks for him to recuperate, but he was a very good dog.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight, returning, Eric J. Dolan, award-winning author of numerous books in maritime history. And this is one of the wildest stories he's told yet. Left for Dead, Shipwreck, Treachery, and Survival at the Edge of the World. Now, we're just setting the stage, basically, in our talk.
Right.
Because so much happens all the time. Like, you can't believe, like, what more could go wrong? At a certain point, a group of people decide to sail to South America, hopefully to Uruguay or to Buenos Aires. Why?
Yeah. Well, when the British brig, the Isabella, crashed, they had no knowledge that there were any Americans there. They thought they were alone, and they said, how are we going to save ourselves? They did have a 17.5-foot longboat on the brig that survived the crash. So they picked six of their own, including Richard Brooks, the captain who had helped save them south of New Zealand, to head out. And they had two goals. One is the castaways thought that there might be a British or Spanish settlement on the Falklands. So this 17.5-foot boat was modified a little bit. They put another strake on. They raised the main deck a little bit. And they sent them out, and they said, okay, look around the Falklands and see if you could find a settlement. And if you can, get them to save us. So they sail around for a while, and they don't find a settlement. They find an abandoned settlement. And the second part of their instructions was, okay, if you don't find anybody on the Falklands, then you need to sail up towards Buenos Aires, Uruguay, Montevideo, about 1,200 miles away.
Oh, God.
Because they know that there's a British warship on station in that area that might be able to send a rescue mission, send a ship down to the Falklands. And amazingly enough, these six men on this small, just think about it, 17.5-foot boat.
Oh, my God.
And they're in the open ocean from the Falklands, and they have one real near miss, but they make it. And they get help from a British commander who turns around and dispatches the HMS Nancy with a captain by the name of William Peter Duranda.
Oh, God.
A bunch of men to go down to the Falklands to pick up all those British castaways.
And when he gets there, informs the Americans that they're prisoners.
Yeah, that's one of the central horrible things that happened.
Oh, my God.
Basically, the Americans, the sealers, and the castaways had come to a mutually beneficial agreement that the Americans are going to save the castaways, and the castaways are going to let the Americans have the cargo that was on the Isabella and salvage rights to pay for their services, sort of. And then this guy Duranda gets there, and he says, I don't care about this agreement that you reached with the Americans. I don't care how nice they were. They're our enemies, and this this British sailing ship is a prize of war, and all these Americans are prisoners of war. And Duranda wanted the glory of getting a prize of war and also the money that would come from selling the ship and its contents as sort of the booty that you get when you capture an enemy ship and have it condemned.
And this is only a little part of the story. Yeah. There are attacks by rats. There are attacks by rooks. There's Charles Barnard gets marooned for a long period of time. It just keeps going on. It's it's one of the most amazing stories of humans against the elements. I mean, it's just an incredible story.
Yeah.
People are going to have to, there's so much that goes on. You have to read the book. My guest tonight has been Eric J. Dolan, award-winning author of numerous works and books on maritime history. And this is one of his wildest stories ever. Left for Dead, Shipwreck, Treachery, and Survival at the Edge of the World. And by the way, Truth in Advertising. It was this is like a just an incredible tale of the sea.
Thanks.
I don't know how you're going to top it. I hope you do. So thank you so very much for being here.
Thanks for having me again. Great.
You listen to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.